Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
So today we are going to talk about empowerment, which is such a rich topic and clearly relates to other topics we've talked about on our podcast. But I wanted to start from framing empowerment off of what Wikipedia talks about empowerment as in the introduction and the framing that it gives the word empowerment on Wikipedia. I think it does such a nice job. So I'm just going to start there. And it says, empowerment is the degree of autonomy and self-determination in people and in communities. This enables them to represent their interests in a responsible and self-determined way, acting on their own authority. It is the process of becoming stronger and more confident, especially in controlling one's life and claiming one's rights. Empowerment as action refers both to the process of self-empowerment and to professional support of people, which enables them to overcome their sense of powerlessness and lack of influence, and to recognize and use their resources. As a term, empowerment originates from American community psychology and is associated with the social scientist Julian Rappaport. In social work, empowerment forms a practical approach of resource-oriented intervention. In the field of citizenship education and democratic education, empowerment is seen as a tool to increase the responsibility of the citizen. Empowerment is a key concept in the discourse on promoting civic engagement. Empowerment as a concept, which is characterized by a move away from a deficit-oriented toward a more strength-oriented perception, can increasingly be found in management concepts, as well as in the areas of continuing education and self-help. I love those last three items that they list because I've dealt personally with that empowerment concept, right, in the workplace, as well as through self-help. And one of those things that I loved about that introduction on empowerment is about kind of that communal aspect and the help that people can get to actualize what they want and need by utilizing resources and utilizing support and looking at things from a strengths-based perspective. So LaShawn, what stood out to you in that very long introduction?
Well, the first thing that came to mind was the idea that we should probably break down this conversation into different parts. So there's the, we could do it like concentric circles going in out from the inside out. So like, for example, our personal self-empowerment, that journey of claiming your own authority, trusting yourself, making decisions from a place of strength, that I think is part of empowerment. And I think that touches to the whole coaching realm as well, because we do work with individuals and we do work with groups as well. Then there's the what you said, Erin, about community, civic engagement, democratic engagement. So there's that macro level as well. And then there's also giving people the authority and giving them a sense that they have some influence on decision-making processes within the workplace or within the classroom. So there's that too, that kind of structured piece where you're looking at structures, you're looking at systems. So I think those are three things. Oh, Erin will love that, right? I'm sure you love that. The three things, the self, the community, and the systems. And of course, there's going to be overlap in all of that, right? As we know, as coaches, the complexity of the human condition, the more that we get, if we are looking at the micro level, the macro is reflected in that as well, and vice versa. So I think it would be really, I don't know, I'm thinking that it would be a good idea to touch on those three different parts. And if you wanted to add more, we could add more. And of course, there's going to be different levels within those three bigger pieces that I'm looking at. But the first thing I want to look at is the individual, looking at the self-empowerment. And one thing that comes to mind is understanding power and influence and authority. Those three words there, power, influence, and authority. So from an individual look at power, that has to do, again, with self-trust, ability to make decisions on your terms, not living your life based on your perceptions of other people's expectations of you, but you forging your own path. And I think self-trust comes in, self-compassion comes in with that as well, where you're allowing yourself to take risks and you're allowing yourself to fumble and to gain knowledge and to not know, you know, to be uncertain, to face the unknown, knowing that you're resourceful, that you're the expert in your own life. This comes from the principles of the International Coaching Federation, and those principles, looking at your client as an expert in their own life, as a resourceful whole human being. How about you, Erin? What are you thinking from the individual lens there and empowerment?
I love the framing that you came up with that really gives some kind of guardrails to this conversation because it's so big, just that word empowerment. So I love that we're starting from focusing on the individual piece. And I just want to say that empowerment in the way that you talked about it is accessible for anyone, even when it feels like it's not. And that's really hard because we all are starting from different places with this word due to lived circumstances, traumas, those sorts of things. And yet, you know what it feels to not have power. And so how can you use that as a way to understand what that self-empowerment could look like for you? And that could look different for each individual. But it's really hard sometimes with marginalized populations. And when we talk about gender and different LGBTQ issues, it's just some of these kind of larger societal topics kind of intersect, like you were saying, from the individual and then also butt up against those systems, which makes it that much more difficult to access some of that inner power. And again, it doesn't mean that that cannot be done, right? And it doesn't mean that that can't be done through resourcefulness or through allyship or through really just working on one's own self-belief and being okay with one's life story and where they're headed. And that kind of acquiescing to being okay with is really challenging, especially for people with critical minds, because there is a lot to try to take on. There is a lot to try to fight in a lot of ways. And so I love when we can go back and bring that back down to the individual level by claiming your own authenticity through this process. And that takes time, that takes scaffolded support, that takes coaching support potentially or counseling support potentially. And I love that you drew in, LaShawn, the ICF standards too, and how trusting as the person coaching the client, trusting that they have all the knowledge and tools that they need right now. Doesn't mean that they're not going to grow tools. They're going to keep growing those tools and expanding that toolkit, but it's just a way of recognizing that wherever anyone is starting from, believing that they have the agency and that the coach believes they have the agency to live a good life. And I know that can be I know that argument can be picked apart, like I mentioned with the structures and different things, but I do believe there is something really special about coaching that empowers individuals to grow in that way, to focus on their wants and needs and their strengths and not the deficits necessarily of the systems or other pieces. I don't know. I kind of am having a hard time moving in between the systems and the individual, but I think that's where I've landed for now. What are your thoughts, LaShawn?
Well, I think that just speaks to the complexity of the human condition, and that we can't just isolate the individual without, especially dealing with marginalized communities where the system is just the sea that they swim in, you know, and they're going to feel it a lot more than, you know, would someone who holds more privilege in the system than someone who is just feeling it every day. You know, they're bumping up against it every day. So that's going to be part of the individual experience. And it's also going to inform one's self-trust, one's agency, especially if they're in a situation where they feel attacked or where they feel threatened or where they feel trapped or they feel disenfranchised. That is going to inform their agency, their self-confidence based on what's happening externally. That's going to affect our sense of agency. So I do think that's really important. And I'm glad that you brought that into the discussion, especially with, you know, don't want to get too political, but with the current political climate and the phrases that we adopt, I think it's important to be mindful of that. So of course we need to acknowledge and be aware of what is. I mean, I think that's really important. And I think it's also important to take an inventory of your life and where you have agency and where you don't, and what you can do in light of all of the, like, the political turmoil that's happening, the changes that are happening. Just reminded of that quote that Colleen Watson, the legacy coach that came on earlier this year, I think it was in February or March, must have been February, had to have been February, where she quoted Dr. Zhivago, to hope and to act, that is our duties in time of despair. So, or times of turmoil, difficulty. And I think that one could look at their situation and see where they have agency and see where they are confident and make more opportunities for that, to do that more often in that space where you feel like you have agency. So, for example, if you don't feel like you have agency at work, let's say you have a totalitarian boss who just, my way or the highway, you do what I tell you, I don't want to hear what you have to say, just do what I tell you, then you know that that's going to be a really oppressive situation. And so just for our own mental health, we might want to look for avenues out of that situation. But where we have agency. So let's say you have this job and it's paying the bills and, you know, you've got benefits through this job and your boss is a totalitarian. So where can you find agency? Maybe you have agency in your church group, or maybe you have agency at home, or maybe you have agency, you know, somewhere else in your life that you can really cultivate that feeling and that experience until you can find a way out. So that's where I see the hope in the act. So where the hope is there's a way out. Always telling yourself, I don't see it now, but there's a way out. There's a way out of this. I can find a better job eventually, or I could find a way to protect myself. I know what the expectations are for this boss, doesn't want to know my opinion, but I'm going to keep that hope that boss might go somewhere else, might change departments, or, you know, and I'm going to really hold on to that hope. But where I'm going to act is where I do have agency. I'm going to act where I do have agency. So those are some things that we can do when navigating systems or navigating things outside of our control, and to keep an empowered stance when we are in life. The more that we can be empowered and the more that we can feel empowered, the better I think it'll be for us when we are navigating this complicated thing called life. Any thoughts, Erin?
I just love that you brought back the hope and act. And the hope piece is really sticking out to me in these situations, and thinking about it as a way, you know, with and through something, it's not going to be easy, right? Sometimes when we don't do anything, that might be a little bit easier, but we might be more miserable. So how can we have that creativity to look at our lives and say, this might be helpful, I'm going to try this, and if it doesn't work out, I'm going to try something else. Kind of the fluidity with it, and there's privilege in that, and so it can be a little bit challenging. But it also makes me think of the growth zone from our one of our other episodes, and how when we are in that space, it's not the most comfortable space, but what does it yield for us in the future? What does it help us grow to and within how we want to show up and how we want to live? And so there are creative ways, and I love how you frame the creativity of maybe it's in your church group, maybe it's in a different group here, you know, all these other places. It doesn't have to, you don't have to get out of that circumstance what you actually want and probably need at that specific time, but you can have these other areas and you can move forward in different ways. And I love that. I think that's a really good example. The other piece that comes up for me is looking at the civic engagement that was spoken to in the empowered piece, which I thought was really interesting. I'm not going to lie. I don't tend to, especially in coaching, see those two go together as much in the self-help side, but that might be, you know, used more obviously in other aspects of the literature. But thinking about one's own privilege and one's own space in the world and how that is used as a way to engage civically and responsibly. I love that they use the word responsibly on the webpage, in a way that supports maybe different people with different backgrounds than oneself. It doesn't always have to be in alignment with one's background. And so that really stood out to me, especially in today's world. Everybody can be empowered in today's world with civic engagement, and especially with those who have time in their day or the space to make that a big part of their lives. I think that there's something that we have been missing in our most recent culture that's different from our past cultures in the way that we have engaged civically. And I know a lot of that has been done face to face in the past, and now it's often through social media or email forms on politician websites. And I think that there is some hope and some life-giving features to the digital world for sure. But also, I think it's really distracted from the ability to root into community and everybody having a conversation together with very different viewpoints. That's empowerment. And that's hard. And I think that that's a lot more and takes a lot more investment at the personal level and at the societal level. And it takes a lot more maybe energy even, right? Versus like if I go online and all I see are people with the same beliefs as myself. So anyway, I think this is a really interesting term, empowerment, for today's climate and how we can think about how we have conversations that are bold and meaningful and hard.
I love that you brought up responsibility because that really piqued my interest when you were reading that definition. When we are looking at power, influence, and authority, when we're looking at those different forms of power, responsibility is such a huge part of that. When you are given responsibilities, like if you think about children, for example, as children get older and as they reach the age of reason, as they say, or they're able to, it's age appropriate for them to have certain responsibilities. So you start out with, okay, now you're old enough, you can dress yourself. So that's a responsibility. And then you have the responsibility of eventually, you know, being able to feed yourself and then maybe even make food for yourself. Like even if it's like simple cheese and crackers or, you know, something that doesn't require having to use the stove, but, you know, making a sandwich for yourself. And then there's also responsibility for younger siblings. Now you're old enough to watch your sister, you're old enough to watch your brother while mom and dad are doing something else. And you start to get these different responsibilities. And with those responsibilities, you have the sense of influence and the sense of authority and the sense of agency. If I can tie my own shoe, I don't need to have mom or dad do it. I have that agency. I can put my shoes on when I want. I have the shoes. I can tie them. I can get dressed. I can feed myself. I can get a snack. You know, these things are things that allow me to take care of myself. And then that sends a message to myself, to, you know, my ego, that, hey, I can take care of myself. I can tie my shoe. I can get dressed. I can, and so on and so forth. And as you get older and you get more responsibilities, it gets bigger. Like you leave your parents' home and go to college or go into the world of work. I can pay my bills. I can pay my rent. I can pay for my own clothes. I can, you know, go to the doctor and I can pay the doctor bill. So when you are given those messages, I can do this for myself. I have the responsibility. No one else is going to do this for me. Mom and dad, They're doing, I can ask them for help, but now I'm an adult and I have a paycheck, or, I have, this, the means to pay for the things that I need in a bigger context. If you look at the civic responsibilities, you've got jury duty, you've got voting, that's big. So I can look at the different things that come through bills, and I can vote on that. I have a say. I have influence on this. I can be part of the decision making. I can go to a city council meeting. I can, join a board. I can do these things as a citizen. My civic responsibility, my civic duty. So then you're given that voice. Voice is another thing that's so important with responsibility. When you're given a voice, when you can vote, other people might look to you and say, you have a responsibility. If you feel a certain way about this candidate or this bill or this, you should get out and vote, because that's your responsibility. That's your civic duty. That's those words that come with power, influence, and authority and agency. Responsibility goes hand in hand with that. So I think it's so important to be mindful of that, where we can find where we're responsible, when we're responsible for others, when we're responsible to others. Those things are going to send messages to our ego or to ourselves. I matter, or I have power, I have influence. If I have the more responsibility I have, the more I feel like I have agency. So I think that's where I see responsibility in this. And I am sure there's other places. And I'd love to hear your thoughts, Erin.
No, I just really love how you explained from the child's perspective all the way up, and how when you scaffold responsibility for your kids in that way, that isn't a significant teaching tool for empowerment in itself. And I know that might sound like, well, duh, but to me, it was like, oh, maybe I need to be more intentional about that with my own kids, right? Like, that sort of thing. But the way that you have framed it, it's really like kind of brought to light a lot of what our personal responsibility has told us, right, in the past throughout our lifetimes. And that hinders or helps how we can embrace empowerment. And so, even if you feel like you're in a spot where you maybe cannot embrace empowerment as much, there's always that one, going back to your quote on hope and act, there's always that one really, really small step. And it may feel silly or like, oh, that doesn't matter because it's so small. But that starts to lay the roots and the foundation for how you can move forward and become more empowered and feel more empowered. And it is this like process, right, of becoming. You feel more empowered and you act more empowered. And it's kind of like this circular thing, and it's all kind of tied together in a way. But as like you said, you get that feeling either through your ego or self that you are more empowered and you have the skills to go along with it. That's where the magic happens, right? You have both of those things coming together for somebody to make a shift or make a change. And so that is not only in relationship to one's personal goals or personal lived out experiences, but also just collectively, right? How are we empowered right now, collectively in society? And I know there are a lot of ways that we are not, and that many people are not empowered right now. But I think when we focus on like what it said, kind of the strengths-based agency that we can embody, we can let go of the deficit thinking, or at least put it aside for a little bit, right? Don't let it consume us altogether or it consume you altogether. And then we can really use that strengths-based perspective to see, how is this my time right now in this society to do what I want and need? And that sounds a little bit very American. It's all about like my wants and needs and, like individualistic, but I don't think so. I think by embracing empowerment for oneself in that way, that's the scaffolding to get to the societal level. And I know there are other scaffolding pieces too, but I just kind of like this idea of really focusing back in on the self agency and what empowerment looks like through the skill building and the feelings that come along with it. So, LaShawn, I'm going to ask you, I guess, a question about empowerment Is there a point in your life that you can point to that you really felt empowered, which led to a greater capacity for yourself?
Yes, absolutely. I can point to something quite recently. So in my 9 to 5, I have certain responsibilities that that I have somewhat been that has been appointed to me, but I've also taken more responsibility for taking more initiative with that. So where I have felt empowered, just making a decision, knowing that I've done this before, I can handle this. I tell myself, you know, I have X amount of experiences, successful experiences with this. So when it arises again, I can make the decision and then go to, you know, my supervisor and say, this decision has been made in the past, and this is a decision that I feel is the best, and then get the go ahead. But the decision has already been made. So before, early on in my position, I did not feel empowered to make the decision. I felt that it was important for me to report to my supervisor, report to them and say, X, Y, and Z is the situation, this and this and this, this is the information, and then wait for the decision to be dictated to me. And then I would then report to those in my team, this is a decision. But now I'm behaving very differently because I have the experience under my belt and the responsibility over a course of, you know, 2 years or 2.5 years. I feel comfortable to and empowered to say, this is what we're doing. Let me get the green light from, you know, the executive director, and then we'll go on ahead and do it. But it, already in my mind, I've made the decision. I've looked at it. I've done everything. And then, of course, I know that if the executive director says, no, we're not going to do it that way, then I know to adjust. But I feel confident and empowered enough to bring it to the executive director already finished. This is the decision. What do you think? Yay or nay? As opposed to, this is the information. I'm waiting for the decision from you. So that's one example that I have of, you know, being more empowered in the position that I'm in, where I have some agency. How about you, Erin?
Just as you were talking, I was like, yes, there is discomfort on the way to empowerment. There is that piece. And I think, you know, the writing the book for me personally over the past multiple years has been a lesson in empowerment, because there were times, like with the car accident, like, is this a sign? Am I not supposed to be writing? Should I stop this thing? Like, all those things our mind does to us to kind of scare us in a way, right? Or make us feel like second guess ourselves. And so I think that the whole process of writing the book, it's almost finished but not quite, has been a lesson in empowerment, and in particular, not only the writing process. And actually, I want to speak to that really quickly, because it's been that process has been such a point of joy for me. Like, it's been so joy filled to write about a topic that's not joyful. but like, I think that's empowerment too, that feeling of playfulness or joyfulness. And so I think that is coming along with this project. And then just putting myself out there vulnerably with a part of my story that I don't love, to share that, it's both empowering and also, gosh, a little bit mysterious and scary. And I don't know what's going to happen with that piece, and, you know, what people will say. And I have to realize, as part of the empowered being that I'm becoming, that it doesn't matter, right? Like, that doesn't matter. It's being able to be authentically honest. And to me, that feels empowered. So I kind of go back and forth right now with this, like, not feeling empowered and feeling empowered and not feeling empowered and feeling empowered. But I think maybe that's another thing with this process, right? Like, it's going to vacillate. It's not a clear line to feeling empowered or feeling empowered all the time. But that would be my example. So, yeah. I don't know. Have we had a chance to really dig in to the layers of support that you brought up for one of the items, one of the three pieces?
Yeah, I think we've touched on most of them. The individual, the community, that's I think the one, because you touched on it a little bit with how as a community can we maybe work together. I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember, it was so
I hear you.
yeah, but I do remember you bringing up community, and that's the one thing that I want to go back to actually, because given all of the changes, the rapid and vast, amount of changes that are happening on the political level, and the governmental level, I think there is more of a call, on the community level to come together as a community. And whereas, when the pandemic happened, when we were insular and we were in our own houses, we were, there was a lockdown, you couldn't go, you couldn't even worship. There were things like you can gather, you can have parties. Those things were put on hold for so long, and they're only just now starting to come back in to our experience. And, I think that more than ever, there seems to be, at least in my in where I work, my 9 to 5 in the sector of nonprofits, in the nonprofit sector, there is even more of a call for community, for rallying, for coming together, for collective power. And I would like to just kind of explore in these last couple of minutes that we have the idea of group empowerment, like empowering each other and empowering a group. Like there's this meme or image. It might be a meme, it might be an image of a fish, right? There's this huge fish, and it's causing the little fish to scatter. But then it says some mobilize or organize or something like that, where all the little fish organize into a bigger fish than that one that's terrorizing all the little fish. They organize together to make a big fish. So there's that image. And that's what comes to mind. And I believe very strongly in the power of community and how important as social beings, what we can do as a group, what we can do as an organized group, cohesive whole, is more impactful, I think, than one menacing, big, seemingly all powerful, authoritative or totalitarian group, or but we are always the people are almost always more in population and size than the people in power, because people in power want to concentrate that power, and therefore they're going to be a smaller group of them. But if the people who have been disenfranchised, or the people who are being exploited, or who are being oppressed by the people with power and privilege, can gather together and organize, I think that there's a lot to be said about the impact and influence of a cohesive, organized mass of people. Any thoughts on that, Erin?
I was thinking, it sounds like this could be something in the works. And maybe that's the
Indeed.
thing. I don't have a lot of resources to share today about what that looks like or who is, specifically doing that. And it's going to look different, maybe state to state and community to community. But it is a good reminder that at the most foundational level, you have the local community to voice your concerns and your needs and wants. And so someone might ask, well, how can I be empowered to do that if my voice is very different than the community, the majority in the community? And that's a really tricky question, right? Because you want to make sure you're safe, you want to make sure your family's safe. But I think just having those curious conversations and coming from a place of curious questioning could be one approach to how those conversations might unfold. I'm really excited in some ways about a lot of the conflict resolution trainings and things that are coming out and how to have really hard conversations. And it's never easy. And I'm definitely not good at hard conversations. But it's it's something I want to intentionally get better at and want to keep practicing. But I think that just naming those things, like this is a hard conversation and I don't agree with you because X, Y, and Z or whatever, can be another approach. And then also being a friend and going in with a small group, because as you may be outnumbered where you live, there could be a couple of people that you could join forces with to have those conversations a little bit more fully. And then in the communities where you feel like you are in the majority, how can you listen to others and other viewpoints and find some way to have some common ground moving forward? And I don't know, I'm thinking here where we live, do you know of any like community conversations that are happening or anything that we could share locally?
Well, what I have heard, there are several local organizations that have and are organizing conversations, especially around the immigration, things going on with immigration. That's mostly because of the population that I work with in my 9 to 5. I have heard of like community conversations that have been specifically for the Spanish-speaking immigrant population coming together, talking about not just immigrant, but the Spanish-speaking population coming together, talking about and expressing their feelings, how they're feeling about what's happening. That's been on my radar because we serve more than like 80% of our families are Spanish speaking. And so I get that on my radar. But I haven't really seen a lot of cross the aisle conversations, which I would be interested in. There's a lot of, I would think, community solidarity. There's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of different organizations. You know, the organization that I work for, the Family Learning Center, we're doing a coalition with other nonprofits, partner nonprofits, as a pushback or a response to a lot of the executive orders, namely what's happening with the Department of Education and other things that are happening with this new budget that was just approved. So there's just getting together and working together, organizing. There's a lot of that going on. The Coloradans for the Common Good, that's an organization that's based in Denver that is coming together. They're working on a cluster for Boulder, which I'm a part of. And they are specifically looking at union representatives, nonprofits, and religious organizations. So they're coming together organizing. And it's really funny that we're talking about empowerment because they're all about power, organized money, organized people. We had a really interesting conversation in our last meeting, which was the first meeting that I attended. And I left with a lot of great information about what it means to mobilize and what it means to organize, which could be a totally different conversation. Maybe we could have Angel come back because he's about community organization too.
Yes.
So that's what I've seen. I would really like to see some cross the aisle things. But like you said, Erin, as polarized as we are right now as a nation, I think that would take a lot of planning and careful planning. And we would definitely need facilitators that know how to manage difficult conversations and emotionally charged topics, because when you're talking across the aisle, that can get really tricky. But that's pretty much what I am aware of so far.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And I think we're circling in pretty close at this
yes,
point.
We're very close.
Did you have one? Do you have a nugget of wisdom you want to share?
Yeah, I would just like to, you know, ask our listeners, where in your life do you feel empowered? Where do you see empowerment, examples of empowerment? And what does that say about, you know, your situation and how you feel about the current situation that you're in?
I love that. I guess One nugget of wisdom that's coming to me right now is about storytelling and maybe being able to share your story and others being able to share their stories for more hope and understanding and more collective agency moving forward.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.